This is All Sides Weekend, Chefs in the City celebrating local chefs and the innovative cuisine of Central Ohio. Good morning. I'm Marilyn Smith. Tricia Wheeler is the editor-in-chief of Edible Columbus and the owner and founder of The Seasoned Farmhouse. It's a new cooking school in Clintonville. Tricia is joining us this morning on All Sides Weekend, along with Rich Terapak, who writes for our blog, and Miriam Bowers Abbott of Columbus Underground. Thanks to all of you for coming out this morning. Tricia, my research indicates that after college you ran a securities firm. It seems as though you've done a complete U-turn from that. Where was your interest in cooking?
I've been interested in cooking since I was a little girl, and I was fortunate to have a mother who made wonderful meals and was a home ec teacher before she became an attorney. And so there was a lot of cooking going on in my childhood.
This goes on in your family. You take complete 180s from one career to another.
And I had wanted to go to culinary school out of high school, but was told it was a hobby and not a profession. So I went and had a degree in national security policy and criminology, which led me to The Limited, where I worked for a year and started a background screening firm after that. So I would do these complex screening solutions by day, and I'd cook and have dinner parties by night. So once the business was acquired, I was able and freed up to go to culinary school just a little later.
So your mother was a cook as well?
Great cook.
And
yes.
Did you learn technique from her?
You know, we were really trying to put dinner on the table. And so it wasn't, you know, I learned by doing. And it was, you know, we had a home cooked meal almost every night. So
you are the editor in chief of Edible Columbus, which would seem to be a full time job. You've been able to merge this with The Seasoned Farmhouse.
Well, somebody referred to me yesterday as a one-armed paper hanger and something else. So I feel like it is a busy, busy time in my life. But the two go so well together. What we talk about in the magazine, we're able to bring to life at The Seasoned Farmhouse.
So being with the magazine, it introduced you to a lot of farmers, people with local farms where you got ingredients, things like that?
Absolutely. It's been a wonderful foundation for learning about our community and learning about what's growing, what's being produced, artisans that are making wonderful things. And through that work, I was able to now incorporate those things into our cooking classes and to feature feature farmers along with our chefs and be able to really connect those dots for consumers coming in who are there for cooking classes.
So what kind of knowledge are they imparting to customers or clients who come in?
You know, we just had a class that was about Stonefield Naturals and the pork and the heritage breed pork that they're raising. And we were able to feature it in the class. We were able to talk about why it's different, how it tastes different, how it's being raised differently, and feature the farmer. And that's a great connection. Mm-hmm. And then those people in the class can go back and find him at the farmer's market. They know more about what they're buying and why it's different.
Years ago, Betty Rossbottom, of course, had a school, cooking school here.
Yes.
And from time to time, people do conduct classes. But are there any other cooking schools in the city?
No.
This is really filling a need.
I feel like it's a good timing with the interest in cooking and the fact that several generations maybe have been removed from being in the kitchen. And so there's this generations of people out there that really haven't been cooking. And that's what we're finding. And a shout out to Betty. I talked to her yesterday, and she has mentored me along as I've been opening up my school and has just been a wonderful supporter. She's actually going to be there in a couple weeks, but she laid a great foundation for what we can do in our community when we kind of come together and cook together.
Now, you took what you refer to as a white elephant in Clintonville, and you and your husband transformed it. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about how you picked the location and what that process was about.
You know, we were just trying to find a building that we could afford and that we could then put the kitchen. There was a lot of expense going into the kitchen, so we felt like it needed to be something we could own. We felt like it needed to have a good karma to it and good feeling about it. And it was a house that then turned into a commercial property in Clintonville, a couple blocks north of North Broadway. And it had been kind of left for 3 years. It had been a dentist office, the most recent use, and then it had been left for 3 years. And it just was really in need of some TLC. So once we took it on, we kept saying, will it open up? Will it open up? And people now that come in can't believe that it would have been in the state it was in when we got it. But we love that it had a parking lot. We love that it was in a neighborhood that cherishes good food mm-hmm. and being connected. And we just felt like we landed in a really nice spot.
So other than a kitchen, what did you install?
We installed a cookbook library. So we have a wonderful library where we're collecting. My collection has now moved out of my home, which it was overtaking our house. So it's now in the library. We have a lot of the gourmet magazines. We have Cooks Illustrated. We have sections on the classics and on newer books relating to fruit trees and homesteading and all kinds of interesting things. And so we have a system where if somebody wants to come in and look at things in the library, we can scan the recipes and email them to them. So, and then we have a small retail area where we're curating great gifts for the season to do with cooks and gardeners.
And you've also incorporated gardening into some of the classes.
Yes. So gardening, we kind of got our raised beds in late, but we have a nice long strip that we were able to put about 12 or so good size raised beds in, herb gardens. We made an edible lawn in the front. We've grown 330 Corsican mint plants. So we've showed that you really could have a mint lawn, and then lots of flowers and some fruit trees. And we're hoping to build a greenhouse this year and to do some cold weather raised beds.
We're talking with Tricia Wheeler, editor-in-chief of Edible Columbus and the founder of The Seasoned Farmhouse. Joining us this morning are Miriam Bowers-Abbott of Columbus Underground and Rich Terapak, who writes for our blog, Chefs in the City. And I would invite you to join the conversation if either of you have any questions.
I'd love to know what classes have been the most popular so far. What has been the big questions people have?
Yeah, that's a good question. What has been popular? Last week we put on a French provincial date night where husbands and wives or significant others could come in and cook together and then sit and dine. We turned the farmhouse into little candlelit two tops and four tops if they were cooking with a group. And we had a really, really long waiting list for that. So I think people cooking together and coming out and doing something different as a couple will continue to be popular. We had Rich's dad and Steve Sover in for favorites of entertaining, and we had a waiting list for that class. So I think, you know, those instructors that have been well-known in the community have been great. And then I teach our French series, a 30-week series, where if you wanted to ever really know the foundations of French cooking, it's 3 hours long, and we have four sessions of it going and waiting lists for that. So I think it's been it's been all over the board in terms of interest, from the amateur to people who are looking for more exciting
things. So this is a 30-week... 30 course.
30 weeks.
Are there credits issued?
Not credits per se, but fabulous meals. So they cook together for about 2.5 hours. We're small classes of 8 students, and then we dine together fabulously every week. And so we have 4 sessions of it going. So four evening and daytime classes of the French series.
I had one question regarding. I read a little bit about your biography and that you mentioned you went to culinary school. I believe the French Culinary Institute in New York, kind of in a second career move. Many people, I think, who go to culinary school dream of opening their own restaurant. Was that ever a consideration for you, or did you just enjoy the teaching aspect? I'm just curious how you came to this decision.
Good question. When I went, my daughter was 2. So I was getting a late start, and I would have loved the thrill of doing something small and intimate on a really wonderful, I always dream of this restaurant I went to in Australia when I was 16. I was an exchange student, and it was a 30-seat restaurant, always candlelit every night, a changing menu based on the seasons and the day. And I would have loved to have done something like that, but it just wasn't, I don't think, in the cards for me for the time in my life that I was at. And what I felt like my biggest thing I could contribute was my friends. I saw my friends around me who really struggled with cooking. They really struggled with deciding meal planning, seasonality, technique and those things. And it was inspired by them that I decided I want to teach. Because I felt like if I could just help, if I could help people in that way, that would be very satisfying to me.
No, that's wonderful. I think for the record, I think, you know, there are plenty of restaurants out there and not enough cooking schools. I was lucky enough to grow up under my dad and Stover and Boudreaux and kind of got my education that way. But I think it's wonderful you've brought that to the community.
Thank you. Thank you.
One of the things I read about you was that you were concerned that the tradition and history of cooking was mm-hmm. being lost. Those of us who were working moms are working moms. Can't always be home every late afternoon to prepare dinner. And I think you're absolutely right. Some of that tradition has been lost. My mother used to cook dinner for seven kids every night.
Crock pot.
Yeah,
that's
crock
my
pot.
Thing.
Yeah.
Well,
this was
pre-crock
pot. I love the crock pot. But what is it about the history and the tradition that you think are so important?
You know, I have always been drawn to the classics. And so I love to know the beginning techniques, the history of things, the classic dishes. I think there's nothing wrong with doing classics really well. And I feel like what's missing is those techniques. And once I can teach somebody the techniques of how to roast a perfect chicken or what vegetables you should roast versus which ones you should saute. And, you know, I'm really into the techniques behind things. And I think the classics were born on those good techniques. And so we go back to those a lot. And we really try to be sensitive with strategies. You know, everybody doesn't have time for a 30-week series, but we're teaching pantry classes, cooking from your pantry, cooking from your freezer, 25-minute, really wonderful seasonal meals. But I think it all does go back to those techniques. Making people feel successful with that little bit of time that they have.
Well, giving them confidence.
Giving them confidence and good flavors that they can put together quickly and feel good about the meals that they're producing, even on limited time.
I got to know, what are classics besides roast chicken?
What are classics?
Yes.
Beef bourguignon, okay. You know, a beautiful apple tart, quiche Lorraine, you know, just, you know, a classic lamb stew.
I'm just
a poached
curious.
Day,
yeah,
you
awesome.
Know?
Yeah.
You know, I think learning in a French culinary way, it was very much on those classic dishes.
And we've received an email from Sarah who wants to know about children's classes where parents can cook with their kids. Can you talk about those and what is age appropriate?
Sure. We've been putting classes on children's classes and kind of testing out what people want. And right now we have classes going from 7 to 11 years old, I think, right now. And we're hoping to add more age groups in. And we're thinking about a young chef kind of series for like high school children and stuff. So we're feeling our way and trying to figure out, but we've sold out our holiday class for kids. And so there's definitely interest there, and we're working on it.
And, of course, like teaching anything, the younger the kids are, sometimes the easier it is, the more fluid the situation is, and they think it's fun. It's not work.
Exactly. Exactly. It's fun to get them in there. It's kind of magical to get them involved.
And you have a 7-year-old daughter.
I do.
And how is she responding to all of this?
Oh, she's wonderful. I have to say I feel, as all moms, very, very blessed. But she loves it. And I hear her. We built her in a room upstairs. So where our offices are, she has a room. And it's decked out for her when she's at the school. And I hear her up there when I'm not upstairs with her. And she's writing things about French food and menus. And so I think she's by osmosis gathering lots of little nuggets.
So she's
and
coming
eating
by
well.
It.
Yes.
Coming by it naturally. One of the quotes that I read from you is you said you felt most inspired when the refrigerator was most empty.
Yes. Yes. That's so true.
What do you do when the refrigerator is almost empty?
I love the challenge. I don't like a full refrigerator. It makes me have anxiety. I feel like I look at it. I hate to waste anything. Mm-hmm. So I can't stand the idea that there's hungry people and I waste food. So we are always trying to use everything we have, which is very much the French philosophy. And so a sparse refrigerator lets me, you know, be creative and lets me use up what we have. And it's less intimidating for me the one strategy I try to give people is grains, make a grain on Sunday. You know, if you can roast a chicken and make stock, you've got building blocks for the whole week, and cut up vegetables. I come back from the farmer's market, and if you can cut up your vegetables and have them prepared, it's a lot easier throughout the week to make dinner.
Well, on that note, we'll leave you. Thank you so much, Tricia Wheeler of the Seasoned Farmhouse. And she's also editor-in-chief of Edible Columbus. The Seasoned Farmhouse is at 3674 North High Street in Clintonville. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, ma'am.
And welcome back to All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City. I'm Marilyn Smith. Joining me this morning, food critics Miriam Bowers-Abbott of Columbus Underground and Rich Terapak, who writes for the WOSU Chefs in the City blog, and kind of taking off on a theme that we hit on last month on drinks. You did a brewery tour. Rich.
Yes, I was invited by Jim Ellison, who many out there may know as CMH Gourmand. He's a well-known food blogger in the Columbus community, and he is a good friend of Bethia Wolf and Andy Diaz, who started the Columbus Food Adventures, food tours that kind of take people to restaurants that are off the beaten path. They also do a taco truck tour, and Jim had the inspiration to start a new company, I think with Bethia and Andy, called Columbus Brew Adventures. And it's basically the same concept. There have been a lot of breweries popping up around Columbus.
Absolutely.
This came up on our show last month. And Jim wanted to begin to try and showcase them. So the tour that I did was the Grandview tour, where there are several new breweries popping up. It's almost becoming the new brewery district. And It was really, really interesting. I'm a lover of beer, and I thought I knew a good bit about it. And going on this tour, I mean, I learned a ton. It started off at Barley's Smokehouse over on Dublin Road. Mm-hmm. And at that stop, we actually did appetizers as well, which was nice to put a little bit in the stomach before drinking beers all night. Had a really great talk from Angelo, the brewmaster there, who has been with Lenny Colada for 20-some years. Barley's originally started down in the Short North. It was there before the Short North was cool. And they've tried a lot of different recipes, a lot of different things, and they're really good at it. I highly recommend a stop in there, even without the tour. We also visited Zauber, which is a new brewery
in Grandview.
They're in Grandview as well. All four of the stops were. And Zauber was started by a guy named Jeff Town. His education was in brewing, I think out at UC Davis. And he started Zauber.
So you can major in beer brewing?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. In Northern California, it's been popular for many years.
Sign me up.
Yeah,
one of
I know.
My friends from Columbus went out there to become a vintner. I mean, they have a whole program.
It really is. It's not just a cottage industry there. It's big business. They started Zauber in a warehouse. They have a small retail area where you can fill growlers, which are little 1 gallon, mm-hmm. Glass containers for beer. And they actually have a retail space they're opening around the corner once they get their SBA funding.
So they're
done.
Not necessarily moving, they're just expanding.
I believe they're keeping their brewery spot in the same place it mm-hmm. is, which is on it's a little side street
kind of that industrial.
It's a little industrial area. The retail space, at least from the pictures I've viewed on their website, looks like it's going to be really nice. It'll be more of a bar. Right now, it's just kind of a small room where you can, fill beers. So we went there and then also to Four String Brewery, which is also a little bit off the beaten path in an old industrial building. Dan Cochran created it. It's a really interesting place. He's actually gone around the state and reconditioned and refurbished a bunch of old dairy vats into beer fermenting. He built a lot of the equipment himself. It's really neat to hear him talk, and I mean his enthusiasm just it really comes across. And they recently got a permit to have a small retail space in the front, so they've got a few tables, and you can try a bunch of their different beers. And then lastly, we stopped at a place that's not a brewery, but features a lot of different microbrews from around the state called the Ohio Tap Room.
Now, this is a former barbershop.
Yeah, it's a small place.
Very small.
Yeah, very small, but I think it's really neat what they're doing. I mean, because they're bringing in stuff from Cleveland, Cincinnati, Dayton, all over the place. And a real interesting shop. It's also a growler fill shop, basically. You can sample the beers there as well, but I wouldn't call it a bar by any means. That's on 3rd Avenue in Grandview. At Northwest, exactly. And, but all in all, the tour was just so much fun. You go with, I think the van would take between 8 and 12 people. I didn't know anyone else on the tour, and by the end, we were all real friendly, obviously. it's not a party bus by any means. You go around having samples of each beer. You'll have a little buzz when you're done. Can't help that. But it was really, really fun time.
The trick
time.
Is retaining any of the information.
Right. And the trick is to go on a full stomach, too. It drops you back off at Barley's where it started. So if you do need something else to eat, that's the one place on the tour that served food. But it was a really great learning experience and a ton of fun. I'd certainly recommend it. If people want to learn more, www.columbusbrewadventures.com is the website.
So how long does this last?
It was about 3.5 hours. Mm-hmm. And this was, to Jim's credit, this was their inaugural Grandview tour. And, he was watching his watch, and he was real good about the time. It lasted about exactly as long as he expected it would.
Okay.
And another neat thing, I mentioned this in the article too, is that if you want to, as you're tasting along the way, if you find anything you like, you can purchase growlers, and they've got cold storage on the van, so you can take some home with you as well.
So somebody was really thinking, huh?
Oh, yeah. No, they definitely put a lot of thought into this, and I think, the fact that he had Andy and Bethia's model to go off mm-hmm. of, and that people have become familiar with that, I think that'll really help people who, might be nervous to try something new. It's a great, great service. I highly recommend it.
So do you have to purchase beer along the way, or is that all?
No, it's
all
inclusive. This tour, and they vary. He does different tours. One even goes down, I think, all the way to Athens, Ohio. And they have another one where they went to Rock Mill Brewery mm-hmm. Down in Lancaster. This particular one's $55, all inclusive, which I thought was a bargain, especially to have someone drive you around as you consume alcohol. It certainly helps. And then you got a little bit of food at the beginning, and also it's worth it just for the educational value. I think it's an excellent value.
This is Chefs in the City All Sides Weekend. I'm Marilyn Smith. We're talking with Miriam Bowers Abbott of Columbus Underground and Rich Terapak, who's just given us a recap of his brewery tour, who also writes for our blog, Chefs in the City, at WOSU.org. If you have any questions or you'd like to join the conversation, you can call 292-8513. You can also join us on Facebook or email us at allsides@wosu.org. One of the other things we wanted to talk about, of course, with the holidays looming, this is November already. Where did summer go? And we've got Thanksgiving coming up. And I guess for the first time in millennia, Thanksgiving and Hanukkah are coinciding. And this is not going to happen again for 76,000 years or something. So it's a once in a lifetime. I don't know how that necessarily applies. There are references to monarchy on the internet and all sorts of strange dishes. What do you hear?
Well, I thought it was fascinating, too. And so I polled my friends who celebrate Hanukkah because I don't have an insider's perspective on this. And they were less thrilled by the fact that they coincided. I thought, it was the coolest thing in the world.
Apparently not.
While I was trying to figure out how you would party plan and have, the latkes with the turkey, which actually makes sense to me since it's a giant starch thing outside the turkey anyway, and you've got so many potato dishes, I don't know anyone would notice if you had one more in there. Generally, I think the approach is, well, you get 8 days to do Hanukkah. So if you have Thanksgiving is Thanksgiving, and then you do your big Hanukkah celebration on day two of Hanukkah, the world won't end. So I kind of feel like that's the most common approach, or at least among my friends.
So keeping the traditions apart is
mm-hmm.
probably
keeping them
a preferable.
Distinct seems to make the most sense. Again, and that's my informal poll. It didn't stop me from looking for people who were trying to have the events together. And I thought maybe Till would, because, they always have a nice Passover, they have a nice second Seder at Passover. And so I thought, and Till's always doing creative things. But they haven't put out an announcement yet. I'm still stalking them. And I know that Matt's Bakery, which is the kosher bakery in Columbus that's located in the Broad Street Kroger, they have a lot of pumpkin things available now. So if you want to go kind of half celebratory, you could have some kosher Matt's pumpkin cookies and pumpkin cake at your Thanksgiving and have a little hats off for Hanukkah.
Well, there used to be Martin's grocery store out on East Broad Street, which offered kosher foods. Katzinger's offers some traditional Jewish dishes. But other than those couple of places, I was having a very hard time coming up with places that offered traditional
Jewish food. I mean, you already mentioned the Kroger on East Broad Street in Whitehall. That's, you know, pretty much the go-to place, I believe, for most of the people in the community. They do have a large section over there. But yeah, other than that, there doesn't seem to be a lot of different places to go. If any of our listeners out there have any recommendations, that would be good information. You can call in at 292-8513.
Well, aren't you the one?
It's good with the numbers.
We are talking with Rich Terapek and Miriam Bowers Abbott, and we're talking about food and Thanksgiving coming up. If you are disinclined or incapable of creating a traditional holiday meal, you may want to make reservations, which are always a popular choice. Many, many grocery stores are now offering full traditional Thanksgiving dinners to people who either don't want to go through the effort or don't have time to. Rich, have you done some research on where to go for Thanksgiving?
Yeah, I did. I did look and just to see if anybody around town had any press out on it already. I looked, found a few different ones in a few different communities. If you're in Westerville, Bell Lago will be doing a limited holiday menu with turkey and prime rib. They'll be open from 11 to 5 p.m. Ella in New Albany is going to be doing a buffet-style Thanksgiving dinner as well. Jay Gilbert's, which is generally known for wood-fired food in Worthington, I don't know how they would generally incorporate that into Thanksgiving dinner. It'd be interesting to see.
Well, you could theoretically cook a turkey on a spit.
Yeah, I suppose so. They're doing a price-fixed turkey dinner at $36 a person. And then Spaggio will also be open in Grandview. They're doing a holiday menu from 1 to 5:30. And then Tucci's, which I've been hearing a lot of good things about lately in Dublin, is going to be doing a three-course price-fixed menu as well for Halloween. So those are a few ideas.
And Thanksgiving.
Excuse me.
That would be so awesome. Yeah. Halloween meal.
Yeah, Halloween-themed meal. But those are just a few places around town.
And I would assume that Worthington Inn is doing so.
I assume so as well. But also keep in mind, too, that many places will sometimes be closed for Thanksgiving. So I also recommend you do check before you try and head in anywhere. I know the Top in Bexley, it's a family-run place from top to bottom, and I know they shut down for Thanksgiving to do the family thing. So I certainly would advise people to take a look at any restaurant, give them a call before you try and head in.
Well, not only for a family to be able to celebrate Thanksgiving, but all the waiters and cooks and all sorts of people to take that day
I think it's for everybody. Yeah.
If listeners have any ideas on Thanksgiving reservations, you can give us a call, 292-8513, or you can email us at WOSU or at allsidesatwosu.org. Miriam, you have been very busy. I understand you've upped your production at Columbus Underground.
I have. You know, when I worked for print, I would write a review every other week and then little news blurbs in between. But Columbus Underground has a schedule that goes review every week and then a feature that I get to kind of choose. And the feature can be a death match, which I have such a good time with those, which is where you pit one food against another.
Oh. I was going to say that seems to be a far fling from restaurant review.
It's all two
chefs in a cage.
I would if I could.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
It may be fodder for someday. Or I can do a locally produced food.
So it's still food related.
Yeah, it's all food related. It keeps me eating a lot more. I'm a lot more well fed online. But and it also gets me into kind of some weirder things like
so
this
it's
week.
A virtual feeding.
Right.
Well, I did notice that you've gone back to some reviewed restaurants in the past, Bazzi Italia being one of them
early
October.
That was good. I was so happy to find the thing that made me fall in love with Bazzi Italia in the first place. And that was the penne that they have. It's an Italian sausage sauce that they put on top of it, and it has raisins in it. Mm. And that's like 10 years ago, I thought, that is the best idea ever. Even though it sounds odd, it's really good. And when I came back, you know, so many things on menus change, especially when it's a restaurant that focuses on locally available ingredients. Mm-hmm. And I was so tickled to find that was still on the menu. That was the first, I was like, getting that, I want that.
Skillet was another one that you recently reviewed.
Mm-hmm. And Columbus Underground, actually, those were both editor's suggestions. So a lot of times I suggest things, and they said, you know, Miriam, Columbus Underground has been around for a while, but we have never reviewed these places. So both Bazzi and Skillet got tapped from above. And I was, how great is it to get to go to really great restaurants, and not just go experimenting around with places that no one's been to?
Well, the pictures on your on Columbus Underground are absolutely tantalizing. You look at some of those pictures and think, I've got to go.
I think that is the nice thing about online. I mean, I think they get that people do a lot of their eating with their eyes when it comes to food. It's like food porn. I mean, people use those two terms together a lot, but the internet is really good for that. And the photographers at Columbus Underground are really good at that.
Well, and that's why presentation is so important, because you are taking the dish in with your eyes before you even taste it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I did that Wolf's Ridge the other day,
yes,
we got a lot of good comments on the photos that we took of that food.
It's pretty.
It's beautiful food. They make great presentation. We talked about
which
the
is a little unusual for a brewery.
For a brewery, exactly. That was kind of what stood out, was that, I mean, this place could stand alone as a restaurant. I mean, maybe in spite of the size of it, the brewery will certainly help, because it's a large space. But yeah, the food was fantastic, and it's terrific presentation.
And that's another one that you recently reviewed, Mary.
Right. And it was Rich's Raves that I was like, well, I got to try it. But I, in spite of the kind words that you had, I did not expect it to be as upscale as it was. And it's mostly because I don't think Wolf's Ridge presented itself that way. They didn't do all the press releases that were like, it will be a culinary adventure unlike any that have ever been. People usually talk themselves up when it comes to what they're doing in the kitchen. And I didn't have, it was just you talking them up that sent me there.
Thank you.
Well, I trust you.
Sometimes that's better, though, to just let the word get out.
And
it gives you more time.
I've talked to several people who've been there since then who have been very impressed with it as well. I think all around, if you haven't been, it's on 215 North 4th Street downtown.
Right next to the elevator.
Yep.
Right, which when I was thinking New Brewery District, I was like, well, that's two right next to each other.
Yeah, they're popping up everywhere.
So this isn't in Italian Village. You're just outside of Italian Village. It's more in the core of downtown.
Yeah, it's right near kind of the entrance to 670 there, or where you go over into Italian Village, kind of past the convention center. It's just before that if you're heading north.
292-8513, if you'd like to join our conversation about restaurants and food. You can do that by calling 292-8513. You can go on our website, allsides@wosu.org. We are going to take a quick break here. We'll be back in just a moment. And we're back on All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City. I'm Marilyn Smith. We're here with Rich Tarapak Jr., who writes for our Chefs in the City blog at WOSU.org, and Miriam Bowers Abbott, who writes for Columbus Underground. And another review that you recently did was Charlotte and Olivia's Sublime Ice Cream. I have not seen that anywhere. I'm absolutely unfamiliar.
Okay, well, you know what? I got a grocery cart one day, and I went through the Hills grocery store looking for all the things with the little Ohio label, because that is so helpful now that stores are putting Ohio labels on things. And I got to the freezer section, and sure enough, there was an Ohio label on some pints, and they were $10 pints. And I'm like, oh, that's Jenny's. And then I looked closer, and I'm like, no, it's not. It's Charlotte and Olivia's. That is not the same name as Jenny's. And then I looked some more, and it's not just Ohio. It's New Albany, which I consider that part of Columbus. That's us. So I had to buy some of that. And I got the...
That's a gutsy move to take on Jenny's in her own backyard.
Well, I know. I found it to be very different from Jenny's. I mean, texturally. Mm-hmm. I mean, they do some adventurous flavors. I happen to have gotten something that that was a fancy name for salty caramel. It's like fleur de...
Fleur de Carmel.
There we go. Yeah. It was something with a fancy, and I didn't, of all the flavors to pick, the one that Jenny's made famous.
That's.
I got home and I thought, I could have picked any other flavor. This was,
tough to compete with.
Yes. And I didn't do a side by side. That would be a death match possibility. But it was, you know, for people who like $10 ice cream, it would be something to try. They do a lot of natural ingredients. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the back of the label, you know, it's cream and it's sugar and that's about it, unless, you know, outside of the flavoring. So it's a I guess, a similar niche in terms of price point and adventurous flavors. And it's good quality stuff. I'm not sure that I'm a $10 ice cream person. I am a put lots of chunks of chocolate in it, and I will be pretty happy with a $3 pint. That's just...
Well, I would think, though, if you're manufacturing it and you're buying all these ingredients and using pure...
It's expensive.
It is expensive.
Right. The cream is really expensive, yeah.
Yeah, even, you know, a pint of cream unprocessed, even at the grocery store, you're like, okay.
Exactly.
That's not going to be joy for a long time. So
you had another interesting encounter.
Oh, my hemp experience. Yeah,
granola.
I should have brought some to share today. There's a and so also.
Yes, you usually bring such odd things to share.
I know. Another thing that made it into my cart was a hemp seed granola, and so I thought I have no idea what this is, but I have to try it because I vaguely know that hemp has something to do with marijuana. I don't know what. I mean, but the plants are somehow related. And I have some hemp bracelets, and I thought, okay, this will be cool. And then the more I looked at the label, the more I thought, oh, yeah, I have to try this because it's also optimized for your chakra. And which is a Hindu thing. So then I got online and I took a test
to
find out.
Go to the ashram after you.
Yeah, it was a 10-minute online test. I like 3-minute online tests. I took a 10-minute online test to find out how my chakras were doing. And I forget
how many are they doing?
Well, my heart one is not doing good. And it's more like my heart is cold and dark. So I guess I can get a granola that's the right flavor to help me be less cold and dark. But I got one that was for my root chakra instead because it had chocolate in it. And I don't know what my root chakra is. That is what I bought. Anyway, it's granola and it's really chewy and it's really natural tasting. And natural tasting is the words I'm going to use and I'm going to go with that.
Yep. That's open to interpretation.
Like, yeah. You know, it tastes good for you, and it's a lot of oats. Really, you don't notice the hemp seed, and yeah, that's.
Well, this sounds like a lifestyle change.
It is. It would require a big lifestyle change for me. If I put a lot of sugar on it and some milk, I'd probably do okay.
You can probably defeat the purpose.
That's it.
292-8513. Beth is joining us. Hello.
Hi. I'm just calling because I just wanted to recognize or acknowledge the death of the Jewish restaurants and Jewish delis in the Bexley area. It used to be primarily Orthodox, and I don't know if a lot of Orthodox or Conservadox have moved to New Albany Lewis Center, but it's been going on for quite a while, and nobody's made a comeback. So I wanted to throw out a little challenge to the Orthodox cook or the Conservadox cook to come up with something that's tasty and foodie friendly. And I bet it would do well wherever it goes.
There is an Orthodox temple on Main Street in Bexley, Torah Ahmet, that gets a lot of people go there. I live about a block from there, so I see them walking every Saturday and on the high holidays. So there certainly are still Orthodox Jewish people around the Bexley area, and there very well may be a market for it. That is a challenge, I think.
It's a huge market that's not there anymore, and there's been a lot of Orthodox who complain, and I don't know where they get their meat from, but I just want to throw that out there, and they could probably do well in a meeting of the urban hipsters and the Orthodox. The other thing I wanted to say is, if you are into that, you know, if you really want to try to have a kosher Thanksgiving or you know, however you celebrate it, you're not cooking it yourself. I know that there are kosher caterers, and one does a very nice job at Tiferes Israel. And so I just wanted to put that out there. I don't know the name of the kosher caterers that they use, but I know that they use them for special events. So I just wanted to throw that out there. And if you're not kosher and you just want to do the latkes, I think Whole Foods makes a really good latke, but then you get into the whole crispy latke versus fat juicy latke debate, and that's a whole other show.
That's a death match.
Yes, it is.
A great idea. So, that'll be awesome.
I just want to put that out there.
Well, thank you so much. Obviously, there is a market.
Mm-hmm. It's a challenge, yeah. Hopefully we'll step in and fill it. I did meet a couple years ago. I wish I could remember the name. It was through a business meeting I had, kosher caterer. She lives out in Pickerington. I wish I could remember the name of it, but and I assume you could probably Google that kind of thing. I know there are caterers. I think what she's saying is she'd like to see a brick and mortar restaurant.
Retail outlet.
And that's a challenge that's out there. You know, the market has to create it, but the market certainly, I think, is still there in the Bexley area.
Well, our conversation is far and few between. We're talking going back to beer, from kosher to beer. Mm-hmm. And John is joining us from Powell. Hi.
Hey there. Yeah. Just wanted to plug North High Brewing up on North High Street. They've got a somewhat contractual brewing kind of thing where if you're not really into brewing, but you want to kind of get into it in the whole craft beer sense, you can go in and start brewing their own recipes in their own little batches. They make 6 cases per go-around, and actually I'm coming back up from Cincinnati for a bottling session today.
That's great, yeah. So now we went from cooking education in the beginning of the show to, I guess, this is a place where you can learn about crafting your own beers.
It ties it together.
Yeah.
Well, we have another caller, Brent, who's calling from New Albany, who also wants to talk about the North High Street Brewing, and maybe it won't sound as though he's scuba diving at the same time. Brent, go ahead.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Good.
Good. Well, yeah, North High Brewing, as you can tell, you got two people that have already called in about them. They're an exciting new brewery. And the really cool thing is to tie it back into the cooking. They'll allow you to come up with recipes. So one of the beers that I got to brew with them was a chocolate raspberry Russian Imperial Stout.
Was that good?
It was amazing.
I could see that being good.
Okay. yeah, it was fantastic. So something great to have after a heavy meal, maybe for a nice dessert. But yeah, so with that, you have to actually cook, you know, things like the raspberries and mash them down and strain them, and there's a whole process involved.
So you don't want any seeds in it, huh?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So yeah, you want it to be nice and clean, and then you would mix that in during the brewing process. So it's a nice way to integrate, you know, food and beer in the brews as well.
So are these ideas you're coming up with at home and then taking them into the brewery?
Yeah, that's actually one of the best things about the brewery, I think. So I have all these crazy ideas of different kinds of beers that I'd like to brew. And what I do is I get with their brewers and come up with a recipe in collaboration. And you know, they know how to do all the math behind it. So
the quantities and whatnot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. How the sugars are going to affect the beer and so forth. So I come up with great ideas, I think, and they make them happen, which is the really neat part about what they do.
That's really interesting.
Well, it sounds like fun. And where is it on High Street?
It's just north of 5th and High on High Street. So right next to the Kroger's.
Oh, okay.
Down there.
Okay. Well, thank you.
It's an exciting place.
Sounds like it. Thank you very much for your call today.
All right. Thank you.
292-8513 if you'd like to join our discussion, which is all over the place. But nonetheless, it's all about food. We're talking with food critics Rich Terapak Jr. and Miriam Bowers Abbott of The Other Paper. I'm sorry, of Columbus Underground.
Yeah, it was the other one for 10 years. It's hard to shift to one I haven't even gotten a year at.
One of the things we wanted to talk about is Lucky's Market, which opened last week, I think. Miriam, you've been there.
I went there on the second day. I should start by saying all of my neighbors love Lucky's. Like, I don't know how Giant Eagle is going to make it across the street. They love Lucky's so much. And the reason why I know they love Lucky's is because after I went, I decided I was not a Lucky's kind of person. And I announced it. And then I got 20 comments about what was wrong with me.
There's so many things wrong with you. Cold heart, for one.
I was just open that day. I think they're very excited about the produce, and the produce section is so beautiful. And their specials are really good. I got a good deal. I think their pears were really well priced, and that's, you know, it's exciting to find well priced pears. Then they have a lot of non-perishables, and for me, if I want a Cheez-It, I like Cheez-Its, and I don't like things that look like Cheez-Its that are made.
What about Pringles?
I don't want junky things. You're not going to find Cheez-Its or Pringles there mixed in with the natural things. You're only going to find natural things in the preserved food section. Well, actually, produce is natural, so you're only going to find natural things. So I struggled because my list was diverse, and it was both natural things and wholly unnatural products.
Preserved.
Yes. So the irony of it is that I went and, you know, bought a lot of stuff and I brought it back to my house. And my mother was visiting and she unpacked and started processing things. And then 4 hours later, I'm coming home from work and she leaves a message on my voicemail and it says, this is after I've cursed Lucky's and said it's not working for me. I don't find my Cheez-Its or my Pringles. And my mother says I have to stop at Lucky's again and buy 10 more pounds of their ground beef because the quality is over the top. It's so fantastic. And she was a meat scientist, so I can't argue with her. So there I was twice in one day spending a lot of money at Lucky's.
Well, it may be that you would go there for specialty items and then go to the grocery for your Cheez-Its.
Right, yeah.
It's just right across the street, right?
That's exactly it. Where's my Cheez-Its? And now I've been outed as the Cheez-It eater that I am.
Well, I think it's probably a really good fit for Clintonville.
Yeah, we're groovy, and it's very groovy. So that works. And I would also say that one of the things that colored my first experience is that I pushed my cart behind somebody who was in a cloud of pot smoke the whole time. So everything I smelled in the whole store was pot, mostly because of the customer in front of me. But it does color your view. Aroma colors your view. So that was hard for me, too, on my first visit.
Well, this is a new store that just opened October 23rd on High Street in Clintonville. And there are two additional stores in Colorado, but this is the first one outside of the state. And I haven't been there yet, but I would think that it would be a really good fit for the Clintonville neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we love it.
Muhammad is joining us, and he wants to recommend an Indian restaurant. Go ahead. Are you there?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Good, go ahead.
Hey, I'm recommending one of the dishes. Indian oven, 427 is main, they make seasonal, local grown butternut squash with chicken tikka with curry sauce. The one of the best dishes last few years. He make seasonal. Indian oven make it seasonal October to all the February. That's the best butternut squash dish ever I tried.
Yes, I've been to Indian oven. It is pretty good.
Yeah, and I'm always looking for interesting things with squash this time of year. Mm-hmm. So
seasonal tip. Seasonal is good. Yep.
Okay. Thank you very much for your call today. And, Rich, we do have a few more minutes. You have some news of events that are going on.
I did just want to mention, especially this first one, because it's such a current event. It's actually tonight. There's going to be the first of a monthly series of a food truck event at the Brewmaster's Gate in the German Village Brewery District. It begins tonight at 4:30. There's also going to be beer trucks and live music as well. So if you're in the area or if you're looking for something to do, that might be fun. Other than that, Chez du Bon, which we've mentioned a few times over the last couple months on the show, a new French...
Downtown,
a French, I wouldn't call it... It's more like a market. Market, exactly. Thank you. Is going to open November 15th in the old Wendy's location in the 5th Third Building down on State Street near High.
I'm having a hard time picturing this. 5th Third Bank.
5th Third Building. It's the tower. Yeah, I mean, not a bank. It's the
office
skyscraper. Yeah. A new tenant has been found for the old Hanky space on Front Street.
Really?
Jack Whitney's is the name of the bar. It's started by Kevin and Lori Ames, who many people know from Fresno, which is right by there. They're going to be using the upstairs space, doing kind of, you know, bar fare similar to Fresno. And then the downstairs, that beautiful old cellar area, mm-hmm. is going to be used for private parties and whatnot, since it seems to be tough for any restaurant to really fill that who's not Hanky. one more thing to mention, the Celebrity Chef Tour is returning to the Hilton on December 5th. It features seven different distinguished chefs from around the country. They had one of these several months ago. It was really popular. It's not an inexpensive event. It is $160 all-inclusive of the food, but it's more than you can ever eat. And I talked to a couple people who went to the last one who said it was one of the best dining events they'd ever been to.
This is the new Hilton?
This is the new Hilton downtown. The host chef is Bill Glover. And you can learn more about that at celebritychefstour.com.
After our last program, Steve Stover emailed me and said that the former owner of the Claremont has purchased Marrone's in the Bethel Center. I'm not quite sure what they're going to do with that space. It's pretty much a family-oriented pizza pasta restaurant. It's been there for years, family-owned. Any more developments on that?
I had not heard. And unfortunately, Stover is with my dad out sailing the Mediterranean right now, so we can't ask him.
Poor things.
Poor guys.
You know, the only thing I would add is I've been waiting for Melt to open, and that is supposed to happen in mid-November. And Melt is in the Short North, and it's a grilled cheese place. And I think Columbus has room for two or three more grilled cheese places.
Well, there's Gooey's on campus, which apparently is wildly popular.
That's why we need Melt. We need more options.
So it's M-E-L-T.
There is another that came from somewhere else, right? That is
Cincinnati.
Cincinnati,
right?
I believe it's an extension of an already existing, likely successful place. So, yeah, we'll look forward to that.
So this is just, I assume, just a little sandwich shop where you go in
And get a lot. I think since it's chainish, so there's more than one. So when you say
chainish,
little
as in a chain,
there are several Melts. So when you say little sandwich shop, I think mom and pop, and I think it's probably got significantly more packaging and marketing and slickness to it.
Private equity money behind
there
it.
There we go. So, but the idea is grilled gourmet cheese sandwiches. So anything that you can melt cheese with.
Gruyere rather than just American cheese. I love it as well.
It's not goat cheese.
Some caramelized onions and Gruyere makes a wonderful grilled cheese.
November. We'll talk about it next time we come.
Well, that's seasonal enough, isn't it?
Yeah.
Thank you both very much. Miriam Bowers Abbott of Columbus Underground and Rich Terapak, who writes for our blog, Chefs in the City, at WOSU.org. I'm Marilyn Smith. We'll be back next month with another food show. This is listener-supported WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1 Columbus, streaming on the web at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of WOSU Public Media. News from NPR is coming up next.